Joe Public smokes two packs a day, drives home from work on the interstate highway. After drinking three beers, cell phone in hand, he's doing 80 in his oversized van. But Joe's not afraid of dying from tobacco or drinking or even his driving. Got the radio on, the reception is clear. He's hearing all the things he should fear. Joe Public is afraid of Al-Qaeda. They're coming to get him sooner or later. Joe Public is afraid of terror. It keeps getting closer in the rearview mirror. And all those illegals crossing the border, crawling through the desert, coming for his daughter. Joe Public's got a lot on his mind. Joe Public makes $35,000, has two kids in high school trying for college. He walks in the door, their music is playing. He can't understand a thing that it's saying. But Joe's not afraid that his kids will find the handgun where he keeps it hid. Joe's afraid of the United Nations, gun laws, gay rights, and peace demonstrations. He went to Home Depot, bought duct tape and plastic, in case the real enemy does something drastic, like mailing him anthrax and causing a panic, or requiring everyone to learn to speak Spanish. Joe's ready for freedom to happen when the government comes to take away his weapon. Joe Public's got a lot on his mind. Got asthma at 40. His health insurance costs more than his mortgage. The state stopped testing cars for emissions. Joe's glad cause he would have had to fix his. But Joe's not afraid of pollution, thinks less regulation is the only solution. And don't get him started on health care. He says everyone knows it's a socialist nightmare. He's down with the troops, he supports every mission. That'll keep his gas under $4 a gallon. But why do they hate us? He can't understand. Well, we never ever did nothing to them. Joe can't wait for the next election to re-elect the guy who took away your pension. Joe Public's got a lot on his mind.
Rod McDonald, live here on Out of the Woods. Joe Public, hey, welcome, Rod.
Hi, John.
How's it going? You're out there on the road, heading to Canada.
Yes, we are. I'm traveling with my wife, Nicole, and two kids, daughters, Ella and Alina. We're on our way to Nova Scotia.
And you have some house concerts up there.
We rent a house, and people come, and I sing for them each night.
Oh, I see.
It's okay. Kind of a group thing. It's not public house concerts. They're not really. It's a kind of a movable feast.
So you're up there for most of the month, all the way through the 16th. Is that what I got here?
2 weeks. The next 23rd, yeah.
23rd of July. And then you're down into Maine and Vermont again and all sorts of...
Yeah, I'm playing the Deer Trees Theater in Harrison, Maine with... do you know Dave Rowe?
I don't know.
From Maine. He recorded my song, Sailor's Prayer, a couple of years ago. And then he came down to Florida and played our South Florida Folk Festival. And we got together a couple of times. And a very nice guy. He invited me to share an evening with him at the Deer Trees Theater in Harrison, Maine. That's on the 27th, I think.
Yeah, the 27th. And then looks like you're teaching on the 30th through the 5th at Camp Common Ground in Starksboro, Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're back home for a while, and then you head out to California.
Yes.
So, busy summer of travel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I live in South Florida. This is a good time of year to be traveling. You know, during the winter, you kind of like being in Florida a little more.
Yeah, right. Well, you got another one in you?
Got a request?
Oh, let's see. How about one of the hits?
okay, all right. Let me see. Give me 30 seconds here.
You're listening to Out of the Woods.
Well, I suppose this is one of my better known tunes. Thanks to Garnet Rogers and Sean Colvin recording it. This is one of my oldest New York songs. Back in the day. Let's check this real quick. I haven't been in Concord in many years. I used to play a place here in Concord. A lot.
Where was that?
Oh, God. I can't remember the name of it now. It was, I think it was called Thirds.
Thursdays.
Thursdays.
Is that it?
And it had a kind of a semi-listening room in the basement.
Yeah, that's right. And there was a restaurant upstairs in the music venue downstairs was called Thumbs.
Thumbs.
At the time.
That's it. Yeah. Yes, that is the place.
Yeah, they're still having music down there. They call it something else now, but
they don't call it music, or they call it something besides Thumbs.
Yeah, they call it something besides Thumbs. It's been years since I've been down there, but
city rain, I don't know if it's making me dirtier or clean. Went for the subway, but there was no train, and the tunnel was crumbling for repairs again, and the sign said, "Welcome to America." Jerusalem. Oh, I've been around. You could spend forever looking for a friend in this town, and all you get to do is lay your dollar down till you're stumbling drunk up the stairs again. And the sign said, "Welcome to American Jerusalem." In the temples of American Jerusalem, they buy an ounce of South African gold. They don't care who was bought or sold, or who died to mine it. In the temples of American Jerusalem, they buy an ounce of Marseille white. Somewhere on a street with no light, somebody dies trying it. Somewhere in a crowd, looking the kind of way that makes you turn around, will be somebody who knows what it's about. She's gonna take the ribbon from her hair again, and welcome you to American Jerusalem. Thank you. of American Jerusalem. The homeless lie down at the dawn. The pretty people wonder what they're on and how they afford it. In the ashes of American Jerusalem, the prophets live their deaths out on the corner. The pretty people say there should have been a warning, but nobody heard it. Then shadows lick the sun. The streets are paved with footsteps on the run. And somebody must have got double, 'cause I got none. I forgot to collect my share again. So go west to breathe the cleansing air again. Go Niagara for your honeymoon again. Go on the road if you're going to sing your tune again. Go to sea to learn to be a man again. Till you come on home to American Jerusalem.
Rod McDonald, live here on Out of the Woods and American Jerusalem. Y'all know that one. Yeah. So maybe you could tell the folks a bit about that song.
Well, I wrote that song I think the first spring that I got an apartment in New York with my own name on the lease. I'd been kind of knocking around for about 4 or 5 years. In and out of New York, had lived in Chicago, had hitchhiked across the country a couple times. And there was kind of like a progression that went on. You know, I lived in I was a squatter for a while in a building that subsequently burned down, got robbed. Moved up. After I got robbed, I moved in with a friend that I knew who was not in the music world at all. I knew him from as a newspaper guy. Lived in his spare room for a while. And then I kind of slowly moved downtown over a course of about a year. There was a guitar player that put me up for a couple of months, just sleeping on his couch. And then there was a guy who had a brownstone to himself and let me live on the top floor for about 3 months. And then I moved into the Village and I crashed around for a couple of months, went on tour, and when I came back, somebody gave me an apartment, and then we got evicted. We were there for about 6 or 7 months, and then we got evicted because the guy whose name was on the lease notified the landlord that he didn't want it anymore, and she wouldn't let us have it. She just kicked us out. And then I was magically walking down the street on McDougal Street, and I met this young woman who I casually knew. She was a waitress at one of the clubs I played. I was playing all the clubs in New York in the Village at the time, but I never had a place to live. I was like literally homeless for quite a long time. And she walked up to me on McDougal Street and said, "Do you know anybody who needs an apartment? My boyfriend and I are leaving for Texas tomorrow morning." And I said, "I'll take it." You know, I had a buddy that we were going to share, a guy named Tom Intondi, who was a early, very principal fast folk guy. And Tom and I moved in that very afternoon. We took the apartment, and I lived there for the next 18 or 19 years, I guess, and I always thought, you know, that it was just sort of a miracle that I didn't end up with nowhere to go. I'd kind of reached the end of my ability to crash around, and really, if that hadn't happened, I mean, it happened on the day we got evicted. I think if I hadn't found something that very day, I might have just taken my guitar and hit the road and not come back. And it was like a sign, I guess I'm going to still be here, you know, I'm going to stay here. And so not long after that, I wrote that song. I started writing it as a poem. And then I was trying to convey a sense of something that I had been reading about in Native American philosophy, of the idea of that wherever you are is kind of the center of the universe, but that there is also a center of the universe. And it felt to me like Greenwich Village was the center of the universe, at least to me. It's where I wanted to be. And then the apartment that I had was right on the first floor in the back, and it also felt kind of like that. It was in a room that a lot of well-known Greenwich Village musicians, from Paul Siebel on down, had all lived in at various times. The Roaches lived in this building. Not the Cockroaches, but the singing group, sure. The Roaches. You know, there were a lot of us. It felt like the center of the world when we moved in, and that's kind of what I was trying to convey in this song, that I was this scared kid from a small town and had suddenly, you know, just dropped into the center of the world, and there I was. It's really not about Israel or that Jerusalem at all. You know, it's about kind of the mythology of older things and my own life.
Well, I imagine a big city would feel that way to a kid coming out of a small town.
Well, I'd lived in New York off and on for about actually 7 or 8 years by that time, but I'd never really had a home there. I'd always kind of been moving around trying to figure out why I was even there, you know. By the time this happened, I was an established headliner in Village clubs for probably 2 or 3 years by that time. I spent several months living as a squatter in the East Village while I was, you know, headlining clubs in the Village. People would see you on stage and think, you know, you're this hot stuff person, I suppose. I don't know what they thought, but I was literally, you know, living, hanging on by my fingernails for a lot of it.
Well, you were a big part of the whole Fast Folk thing. Was this all before Fast Folk came around?
Well, American Jerusalem was certainly before Fast Folk. I wrote American Jerusalem in the spring of 1978, I'm pretty sure. Fast Folk really started in the winter of 1982. But I played American Jerusalem when Fast Folk started to take off. Jack Hardy booked us all into the Bottom Line to do a group show, and we each got to do a couple of songs. And he picked the songs. He wouldn't let us have any say about it whatsoever. And American Jerusalem was the song he picked for me to play first. That was really the first time in a New York club environment that I played for hundreds of people, and that was the song that he sent me out on stage to play, which I think I did with a kind of a house band, which turned out to be my own. The White Buffalo Band turned out to be the band that recorded White Buffalo a little later on. Howie Wyeth with the drums and Mark Dan and Jeff Hardy played bass.
Sure.
And that recording is the opening recording on the Smithsonian Fast Folk Collection that they put out a couple years ago, that recording of that performance. So this sort of, you know, helped. By that time, Sean Colvin was also singing it regularly around New York, so people were hearing a really beautiful version of the song by her as well.
Nice. Well, maybe we could get you to do another one. Maybe even White Buffalo, if you
know. I'm going to have to work up to that, I think. I pick one?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Okay. You know, one of the traps that you want to avoid getting into is that people always want to hear your old songs. You know, it's great that they do, but it really isn't enough from the perspective of the songwriter, I don't think.
Oh, I know what you mean.
I remember seeing Mick Jagger doing, you know, on Letterman doing the top 10 things that I learned in 50 years in music, and like number 7 was, nobody wants to hear the songs from your new album, he goes, in his inimitable Mick accent.
Well, I'm just horrible at remembering song titles, so that's, you put me on the spot. It's like, you know.
But well, the reason I mention it is because I actually get a lot of requests for this next song, and I think that this has become one of the songs that has, you know, made it from CD to permanent concert repertoire kind of, which I'm very proud of because I really like this song a lot. It's a true story of a real guy's life who was dragged off to what's referred to as Van Diemen's Land in the song. Would be known today as Tasmania. My name it is John King, from Liverpool I came down to London in the spring for to make my name. For I had learned to work the silver, how to bend the blade. I was carrying a sample of the finest I had made. I went into a London shop, a fine cutlery, and showed the man my handiwork. He just stared at me, called for a policeman, to whom he then did say, "This man's a thief, he stole this knife, please take him away." The judge said, "Son, you stole that knife right up off the shelf." Says I to the judge, "Sir, I made that blade myself, but I haven't no money, he a man of worth. He sent me to Van Diemen's Land, the bottom of the earth." We sailed out on the foamy sea, never to return home, with naught to do but sit below, chained to weep and mourn, and sit in our own foulness, starving to our deaths, till we arrived in Hobart Town, 11 of us left. 7 years was I a slave, then one day set free, and followed by a policeman who soon arrested me. From high up on his bench the judge said, "You'll be leaving soon," and sent me to Port Arthur that very afternoon. So choose your weapon wisely, boys, I'll make for you a knife. You're here in Port Arthur for the rest of your natural life. Prison is a place not fit for man nor beast. There's no escape by land, and by sea a man will freeze. It's here the prisoners built the ships of His Majesty's line, to keep the king in empire and the governor in fine wine. There's been a killing and no one knows whose hand took a life. We're short of men to build the ships, a new prisoner arrives. Here at the bottom of the world is what my life is worth. It's I who make the iron bars, enslaving all the earth. So choose your weapon wisely, boys, I'll make for you a knife. You're here in Port Arthur for the rest of your natural life. So choose your weapon wisely, boys, I'll make for you a knife. I'm here in Port Arthur for the rest of my natural life. Thank you.
Rod McDonald, once again, here on Out of the Woods. John King.
Real guy, real person.
That is a great one. I played that on the show at some point recently.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
We went to the, my wife Nicole and I went to the Port Arthur prison in Tasmania where he spent about 40 years of his life. You know, I think of that song as relevant to something that was said in the political campaign recently, which really didn't get much attention, but meant a lot to me, which was a Bernie Sanders quote where he said, I think it's absolutely immoral for a country to maintain a private profit system of prisons and profit and have people profiting off people's misery. And I'm not sure, I know he said the first part of that quote, I might have added the second by now, but it's how I feel, and I deeply respect that at least one of the candidates, you know, pointed it out, and I think it makes that song more alive to me to think of that, you know, that's still going on 200 years later.
That's a sad state of affairs, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, wow, yeah. And the cars are driving by. Rod McDonald's with us here on Out of the Woods, and he's on his way to Canada. He's a little road weary.
I'm hauling up okay, I think, so far. We've had a real good trip. We spent a couple weeks in Vermont that were really fun. Gotten to do some cool stuff. On this road trip, we've been to the Smithsonian Museum for a couple of days. We've been to the Museum of Modern Art, walked through Times Square, climbed White Rocks in Bennington, you know. Saw Big River last night in Bennington, which was really good.
So how's the knee?
Yeah, how are my knees after climbing White Rocks?
Yeah, I saw your post there about your knee.
I'm okay. I was pretty sore the next day, but I'm hanging in there now, I think.
Very nice.
It's not like something I do every day, but you know, I've hiked enough in my life that I can handle a reasonably small hike and still survive, I think. It was great fun, actually. My daughter, Elena, really wanted to go, and she refused to let me quit several times when I would say, hey, you want to turn back, say no. We kept on going, and we made the top. So,
excellent. Yeah, I've been following your exploits there on the old book face.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, I should mention that all of these songs are available on CD. So far, at least all I've played are on CD, and my CDs are on CD Baby, Amazon. You know, folks want to hear this music, they can. There's a live performance of John King on YouTube. There's also one of American Jerusalem. Oh, there's one of Joe Public, too. There's live performances of all those songs on YouTube. And of course, I have a website, rodmacdonald.net, and it's spelled MacDonald.
The Highland version.
Yeah, the Scottish spelling, so they tell me.
That's what Kate McLeod said, the Highland spelling of Mac.
Yeah.
MacLeod, MacDonald.
Yeah. Well, up where we're going in Nova Scotia, there's a lot of McDonald's around. I imagine we'll meet a few.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Most definitely. Also, PEI if you get out there.
Yeah. Don't think we will on this trip.
Not this trip, yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. They put a bridge out to there. It's probably changed. Mm-hmm. We used to go on the ferry back when it was the only way to get to some of these places. But
mm-hmm. You know, I have another interesting Concord connection. That ran through my brain a few minutes ago. Your former congressman, Paul Hodes.
Oh, yeah.
And I were in a band together in New York.
Paul, yeah.
Yeah, we briefly were in a band together in New York City before he moved up to New Hampshire. We used to play the same coffee house all the time, and at some point we joined forces, and he played with me for a few gigs. Good guy, good pal.
Yeah, very cool. And you also have a bit of a rock band that you play with from time to time, big brass bed.
Yes, we've recorded three albums. Most of the albums are Bob Dylan songs. We did record John King, though, as in addition to it being on one of my Songs of Freedom album as a solo piece. It's on, I think, Big Brass Bed's second album, I think, Dylan Jam Plus Two. I think two of the songs are mine. I think that's one of them. That's the Plus Two part. Yeah, Big Brass Bed's a very good band. We play also under the name The Humdingers in South Florida. So if you look on YouTube and see any videos for Big Brass Bed or The Humdingers, it's pretty much the same band. The only difference between the two bands is the bass player. We just got named Best Folk Band in South Florida by the New Times about 2 weeks ago, in fact. And it's kind of interesting because we're an electric rock and roll band, really.
Yeah, but, right.
But the writer said, well, if Dylan could plug in at Newport, then I suppose a Dylan tribute band that plugs in is just really playing folk music. You know, I kind of think that's true in a way. I like that attitude.
Right. So, yeah, they throw the folk word around, sort of like they throw the bluegrass word around nowadays. It kind of applies to things that might not necessarily be what you'd expect.
Well, do you consider your radio program to be a folk music radio program?
Most definitely not.
Most definitely not. Okay.
Most definitely not. Well, when I compare it with a lot of the other shows that are more of the dyed-in-the-wool sort of Pete and Woody kind of shows, but
I've always thought that being a folk singer and playing folk music was a very honorable thing. In fact, I don't think of myself as doing folk music purely because not for the usual reasons. I mean, I play acoustic guitar and I'm not on a corporate label. That's usually when they call you a folk singer. That's sort of, they call everything that isn't on a corporate music label folk music nowadays, or roots music. But
right.
I don't, that's not why I don't think of it as folk. I think that folk music, you know, is music that's seasoned by time. So to me, I don't see how you can be writing folk music in the current sense, but I do think that songs become folk songs over time. American Jerusalem might be one of those,
right,
for example.
It becomes part of the canon. Right?
Yeah, it becomes known enough. I get emails from people, you know, asking me for a chord chart because they want to play it in their kitchen. That, to me, is a folk song.
Sure, yeah.
More than something that, you know, is... just because you sing it like that doesn't make it a folk song. You know? In my IMHO, as they say, in the digital marketplace.
Right, yeah. Rod McDonald's with us here on Out of the Woods this week, playing live for you. We got to think about taking a break here in just a moment, but we'll be back with some more from Rod for another few minutes anyway, and get him up on the road heading toward Canada and all that good stuff. All right, folks, we will be right back after this.